Lopez, also known as Empress Of, and you're listening to the LSQ Podcast.
It's Jenny LSQ. Welcome to episode 46. And yes, this is a new theme song. Massive thanks to Dexter Tortoriello of Houses for composing and recording it. And the interview you're about to hear with Laura Lee from Empress Of is something we recorded remotely just after she had released her excellent new third studio album, I'm Your Empress Of. Let's get into it. Well, Laura Lee, welcome to, sort of virtual welcome to the LSQ Podcast. It's so great to finally meet you in the midst of a weird time to be trying to, promote an album. I can only imagine it's like just been kind of a fugue state of a couple of months.
Yeah, I mean, it's been interesting. It's kind of just like, you know, like everything in life right now, it just becomes like the new normal. You know, the way we interact with other people and the way we consume and the way we, like, you know, like everything, the way we experience life right now, it's just become the new normal. So promoting a record is just also kind of become the new normal. Like yesterday, no, 2 days ago, I did a Twitch live stream for the Grammys Music Care, and it took 2 hours to set up. and some guy had to like share remotely my computer and like set up software and like all this stuff. So it was just interesting.
So tell me about these sort of earliest moments as a kid that you felt a creative urges.
Well, I grew up with a musical dad. My dad is also a pianist, and he really knows how to play like a lot of genres of music. And so, I don't know, I just grew up like with him wanting to teach me how to play scales on the piano and wanting to teach me like how to play Beatles songs. And at like 5, I think like when I was like 13, I started to like write songs. And they're just like kind of bad songs, but I really liked, you know, I think like the ambition to want to like express something like emotional, that's part of what makes you an artist, and like wanting to express an emotion and wanting to capture like a feeling. So I don't know. I think like as a kid, I always gravitated towards like music as like my form of expression.
And what stuff were you just, what was the earliest stuff you were a fan of as a kid? I mean, you mentioned the Beatles, obviously, but when you kind of started pursuing things that maybe weren't passed down from your parents, what were the things you were finding?
I think the first thing that that felt like completely my own, because I grew up with I grew up in a Latin American household, the first thing that felt like completely my own was jazz. And that just like came about like from stumbling on like, you know, like a Walkman radio, like stumbling on the AM dial and finding like a jazz station and feeling like it just felt so distant. And sometimes like as a kid of an immigrant, you want to like connect to American culture so much. I felt like jazz was like so American and so distant from salsa music, merengue music, cumbia, like all the stuff that was playing in the house, that I just like, I became really, really obsessed with it. And then from that, I stumbled upon like Bjork and it's like her song, It's Oh So mm-hmm. Quiet, because it had like a, like it was linked to like a jazz forum or like something.
Yeah, that Benny Goodman big band thing.
Yeah, exactly. And like, so through that, like I found about like, you know, alternative electronic music and like Imogen Heap and like Regina Spektor and 07 and all that stuff. Like I was listening to that in high school. Like when I was like 13 or 14. So I felt like that was how I got into like electronic music.
Right.
Yeah, but really like I was like obsessed with jazz, and I think jazz, like now because I've studied it so much, I feel like a little, like my relationship's a little different to it. But as a kid, yeah, it felt like really free.
Well, no, I'm like, intrigued. I'm intrigued to know more about how you feel like your relationship to it is different now.
Well, now it's just like, it's just hard for me as an artist to like want to make jazz music because my medium is electronic pop.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know, I think it would just came from a thing where, like, you know, you're, like, learning music and the vocabulary of certain styles of jazz will teach you so many fundamental things about music, that like chord structure and tempos and rhythms and time signatures. Like, it'll just teach you like so many things you need to learn, like similar to classical music. I mean, and lots of classical music is in jazz music, so in that way you're like, you're learning so, like, so many worlds at once. But yeah, like, I don't know, I just, like, for me now, music is more than, I'm like really happy about this, like, I'm not really technical, but more than anything, music for me is like a very like spiritual and emotional experience and liberating and all those types of feelings. Like, so I don't know, I just like, I just want to dance and cry and like for me, like, yeah, like making electronic pop and things that are like in that realm is just a lot easier. But you can hear, like, influences of jazz in, like, certain songs of mine. Because, like, you know, it's, like, deeply ingrained in my vocabulary as a musician.
So, yeah, because you went right to Berkeley for college and studied all that shit. Was it a jazz? Yeah. Did you kind of go in with, like, pursuing a jazz focus?
Yeah, I went in to study. I started studying jazz, and then they had a department called Music Production and Engineering, and I applied for it, and I got in, and I was, like, one of the very few women who were studying it, and I think that was, like, the end of that. I was probably, like, 19, because I had already been making beats for, like, 2 years, and they had this sort of, like, pseudo-jazz pop electronica. It was right. Bad. But, you know, like, you start to, like, you listen to other stuff. You listen to, like, Aphex Twin, Radiohead, like so many things that, like, you know, then it becomes, like, a new vocabulary of, like, of electronic music that you're getting into. But, yeah, I quickly, like, when I got into college, I quickly, like, left the jazz study to, like, study, like, music synthesis and, you know, how to make sounds on synthesizers and how to produce and how to record and tiny bit of mixing, like how to make stuff sound good in programs.
I've heard from artists different perspectives on their experience at Berkeley, you know, from the side of people who stopped going because they were like, I can't, this isn't for me, to people who, like yourself, you did a whole program there, right? You went to the end. Would you advise someone, like, you know, who was starting out making music to do that, to go get a degree and focus on it in that way?
I think when I was going to school, it was a different time. I think you could do a lot yourself. You can learn a lot on like YouTube tutorials and like asking friends and stuff. I don't completely necessarily think it's necessary to pay like so much money.
Yeah.
I will say, like, I mean, I met everyone there, and I got access to like crazy studios and really crazy like synthesizers, like old ARPs and like Moogs and like, because, you know, they have all the like tools. You know, as a new like musician or producer or artist, like, you might not like afford or have access to that stuff. But yeah, so I will say, like, there are the resources in institutions like that, but it's just so expensive. I'm like, you can just, like, teach yourself or make music in your bedroom or in your laptop.
So simultaneously, were you, you know, able to go out and see shows during this, you know, high school and into college? And were there people in your life who kind of turned you on to this stuff that you were discovering, whether it's the Aphex Twin or Imogene Heap or whatever it might have been?
Yeah, I was like, I didn't go to shows in high school. In college, you know, I got to see like a lot of shows and like from people who like traveled through. I would say the biggest learning experience of my life was living in New York in like 2012. And that was like, you know, I actually just like, I want to write a book about it because it's just like, it was such a special time. there were so many DIY venues like Shea Stadium, Glasslands, Death by Audio.
Oh, yeah, 285 Kent.
285 Kent, yeah. So, like, it was weird. It was like I moved to New York and I was at Glasslands like the first night I moved there. And then I was there every night for almost like, I don't know, like all, like 2 years, you know, like going to see shows every night, like knowing the door person, like for every venue, like they were family.
What are some shows you remember just off the top of your head, even seeing during that era that were my, I remember seeing Tame Impala at Glasslands,
yeah,
their first
exactly.
trip through, and it was, everyone was going nuts.
Yeah, I mean, you see, like, so many shows. Like, I saw Grimes play to 200 people and snuck in. And, like, or just, you know, like, I knew yeah. the door guy. And, like, and he was just like, yeah, come in. Like, it was just, like, family. Like, you know, it was sold out. Like, I couldn't get in. But I had never seen anything like that. Like, people doing, like, DIY production value shows, projections, like, contact mics, doing like, you know, just all these type of stuff, like trying to bring an illusion on stage even though they didn't have the production mm-hmm. value. And that stuff is so inspiring. And also just seeing sweat from these people, like, who become so huge, like seeing them sweat on stage and seeing them like at a stage where you are is inspiring, you know.
Yeah, and when did you start playing shows?
I started playing, like, I think, like, 2013 I started playing. So, like, pretty quickly, like, once I moved there. Yeah, I played my first show at 285 Kent. And the thing with that time is that, like, it was so common to go to these places and probably see an amazing show. That, like, you know, at 285 Kent, like, I played there and got a booking agent, like, pretty much after the show.
Nice.
Because, like, people come out and they want to see music. It was such, like, a classic, like, idea of the music industry and live music, you know? Like, I don't know, it just felt like a really special time. But I learned a lot from going to see live shows all the time. And yeah, just about like performance and like how to engage a crowd and how to, like, you know, like what works on stage, what doesn't work on stage. Sometimes you need a band, sometimes you don't need a band. Like I don't know, it's just like I learned a lot.
Do you feel like have you grown in confidence a lot on stage and over the years since then, or did it feel like it kind of came naturally to you when you
No, I mean, I'm a performer. But I think, like, when I first started playing, it's just different now. Like, now I just know the stage is, like, my space. And I know, like, what I need to do to prepare for it. And I know what, like, I know how to control my voice. I know, like, I know how to move, like, across a stage that's, you know, a 200-person venue or a 10,000-person venue. And that just, like, comes with experience. But, like, I think when I was first working, it was just a guessing game, and it was mostly like reading the crowd. But now, I don't know, I like trust myself a lot, and I know a lot about like who I am as a performer that I don't really need to, like, I feel like I can provide, like, even if a crowd isn't into it, like I can provide an insane show. And I think when I first started playing, I needed energy from the crowd.
Yeah, that's cool, because it's like you can just get into your, it's just like you can initiate the sequence, and you're like, okay, I know how to do this, let's just initiate the sequence and do it.
Yeah, it's just like, I don't know, I think it comes from like opening for like massive artists who, like, their fans don't know who you are, they're like just waiting for you to end so you can get, so they can watch like Florence and the Machine or something, you know? Yeah, just stuff like that, where I'm like, I have to convince, like, everyone here that, like, the opener is worth listening to.
Yeah, but I'm sure some of, yeah, you get such great fans that way, right? The people who are there paying attention early on, they're like, they never forget that time they accident. I mean, some of my favorite bands are one, and artists are ones that I accidentally saw opening for someone where you're just like, thank God I got here early.
Yeah, definitely. I love surprises.
And as a singer, I mean, by the time you were in the Berklee program, were you all, was singing already a sort of a key part of what you were doing?
Yeah, I mean, I've been a singer before anything. Like, I kind of remember, like, singing and my mom being like, whoa, you can sing. And then, like, her making me sing in front of my aunts and me, like, being really shy and her being like, no, do it. You did it for me. Now do it for your aunts. And then, like, singing in front of my aunts and then them going, yeah, you can sing. Like, I don't know. It's just, like, a funny thing. I was, like, 8 or something. But, yeah, I don't know. I've always been a singer first. But now, like, I don't know. It's kind of twisted with production because I sometimes, like, it's nice to not be a singer.
Yeah, I mean, but it, like, also it's so great when you can do both and it's not just a matter of like achieving a sound on a record that you can't duplicate, you know what I mean? Because I think that's increasingly common, and it's an art as well to make things just with a computer, but yeah, I mean, just to have to know that you can take your voice places must give you a sense of possibility as an artist, you know?
Yeah, it's a thing where I know no one in the world has like my voice, like, and I know like no one in the world has like Lizzo's voice or anyone's voice, like Maggie Rogers' voice or like, you know, Porch's voice. Like, no one has that voice, and that's what makes you an individual, and that's like, I don't know, like, no matter what song I write, it's gonna transform like when I sing it because it's my voice and it's like my experiences.
Tell me a bit about your songwriting practice and how it sort of evolved, you know, from when you started as a kid to now. Do you, you know, what does it look like when you're in the mode where you're going to write music?
I generally, like, write a beat first, and then I loop it, and I just sing, like, stream of conscious stuff for, like, half an hour, or sometimes quicker. Sometimes the song just comes out. But, like, it starts with the beat, and then I sing a bunch of stuff, and I try to, like, I go back and edit it, and I choose the parts that feel the least obvious to me to be the song.
Interesting. You're, like, looking for the spaces in between the things that feel, like, too easy.
Yeah, because, like, sometimes the first melodies you think of are the really obvious ones, and I like thinking of the melodies that aren't. Can you hear that saw in the back?
I can hear the saw, but I'm not worried about it.
Okay, cool. My boyfriend is, like, making a table for me.
Nice.
Yeah, he makes furniture for fun. He's really good.
Furniture. He makes furniture. Definitely pandemic has reminded me that I need to, like, cultivate some true, like, just basics, primal skills like that, you know?
No, you don't.
Like gardening or something. Like, you know, like, I just, like, all these things where I was just like, I should have some basic homesteading abilities so that I can survive anything, the apocalypse or whatever.
I think it's fine. I don't know how to bake or anything like that. Like, we're fine.
Yeah, we're fine. So talk to me about the new album, about I'm Your Empress Of, and kind of what were the creative breakthroughs for this group of songs? What was the music that came to you first?
The first song on the record is actually the first song I wrote for the album, and it just came, I was, like, chanting, I'm Your Empress Of, and I was, like, I don't know, it just felt like such a statement and, like, a moment of arrival, and I just wanted to, I don't know, it made me feel like I knew what type of record I was gonna write. And then when I got my mom to do, like, the voiceover stuff, that's when I was like, oh, okay, this is, like, that kind of record. And so it really became, like, a story after that. Because she gave me all these, like, bits about, like, her, you know, what it means to be a woman and, like, her experience as a woman and an immigrant and, like, all this stuff. And I was just like, okay, like, I'm going to put this on this song and this on that song. And it really became a narrative after that. But the first song is, like, I'm Your Empress Of. And it really feels like an arrival moment of, like, you know, this is my third album, but I'm, like, arriving again. I'm here again. I'm here, like, a, I don't know, like, a rebirth or, like, or something, like, recharge.
Yeah, I mean, and I know that this collection of songs, as you've said, is, you know, was in part inspired by a breakup and was like a breakup catharsis moment as well. Do you find that when you make music about something that's troubling you that you feel better? Is it like a medicine?
Yeah, I mean, going back to like, you know, what type of artist I am, like, music to me is like the best way I can express myself. And yeah, I generally don't think, like, I don't go to therapy, and so like music for me is in that way is like a way I can just kind of get out what I need to work through in my head.
Yeah, and so obviously, you know, you come to the end of making this new album and it's freshly out, so your mind is still there, but are there any kind of, did you leave making that album with any ideas already for like, you know, I want to try more of that thing I did here the next time, or kind of spots that you feel excited to explore in whatever you do next?
I don't know. I just took a lot of chances on this record with like, with sequence and production and like hard cuts and unfinished vocals and like vocals that were just recorded in like a room with no like sound treatment and like all the vocal takes, the crack and all that stuff. Like, I just took a lot of risks with like not being too polished and perfect. And you know, it comes from making a record in like 2 months and like wanting to release it during a pandemic and like the rush of all that stuff. And I think like the biggest thing I learned is like everything has like its plan. And I think like yeah, like not being afraid to accept the course of something or the unevenness of something or the rough edges. Like, I think that's a big thing I learned, which comes with like just getting older and like mature and just like accepting. I don't know. It's like accepting it for what it is.
Right, and accepting yourself, I guess, as well.
Yeah, and it just like, I don't know. There's just such a confidence in like trusting yourself on this record that I really love. You can hear it on lyrics. You can hear it on like the production and like, I don't know. It's just like, even with mixing it, I was like, I wasn't even worried about it sounding too polished. I just wanted like, I wanted the like brokenness to come through on all the sound.
I love it. I mean, I think it's your best record. I am super into it. And I think that's probably a good place to wrap up. But thank you so much, Laura Lee, for making this happen in spite of the complications today and technology. We did.
No.
We got it done. All right, well, that does bring us to the end of episode 46 of the LSQ podcast. Thanks again to Laura Lee, and massive thanks to Dexter Tortoriello, who also wrote and recorded this piece of music, my new outro theme. And in the weeks and months ahead, I've got upcoming episodes with Dashboard Confessionals' Chris Caraba, with the songwriter Justin Tranter, with King Tuff, Kyle Thomas is his real name, and singer-songwriter M. Ward. So subscribe if you hadn't already done that, and whenever you have questions or feedback, you can reach me on Twitter and Instagram @JennyLSQ. Thanks so much for listening. I'll talk to you next time.